You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and a very warm welcome along to the Daily Racing Podcast brought to you by William Hill. Good to have you with us. It is Thursday's edition of the podcast that you join us on. Hopefully you can be with us on Thursday afternoon for all of the racing. We're live at 12:05. Myself, Sam Norris, joined in the studio by Kate Tracy and Gary Capewell for the day's action. We've got plenty of jumps racing coming in the afternoon, and we've got action on the all weather as well. So lots to go at on Thursday. Hopefully going to point us in the direction of a couple to follow. At Wincanton on Thursday is Andy Gibson, who is alongside me now. Andy, how are you?
I'm very good, Sam. Are you doing all right?
Good, yeah. Not too bad. Yeah, enjoyed it last weekend. Looking forward to it this weekend, of course. We've kind of reflected plenty on the podcast in the early part of the week about what we saw at Cheltenham last weekend. But myself and Andy were having a very interesting discussion yesterday. And we had this discussion off air, Andy. Mm-hmm. And I came away from it thinking that was too good for us to not hit record on. And it was you telling me sort of about the comparison in times as regards a couple of the runners at Cheltenham on Sunday. We've had lots of reflection, but this is certainly something that I haven't heard alluded to. Just talk us through what you saw on the clock on Sunday at Cheltenham.
Okay, so it's always really good when you've got two races run over the same distance on the same course on the same day. And even more so when they run next to each other, yeah. So that you haven't got the sort of concern about the times being impacted upon by horses cutting up the ground over, 2 hours, one running at the beginning and one running at the end of the evening. So put the kettle on. I've got two screens at home, put the kettle on one screen, put a little log on the other screen, and just played them from the first fence. You know, they obviously jumped the first fence at the same time and then just watched how the races develop. I'm not always that concerned if I don't have a number for them. I prefer to just to understand the story of the race and how it's unfolded and why it's unfolded in the way that it has. So in the case of Put the Kettle On, she was actually about 3 seconds quicker than Politilog on the approach to the second last fence. She's obviously had a much tougher lead than Politilog. And then from there on in, Politilog took over and ended up finishing very slightly in front of her. So you could argue that therefore that the fact that Politilog has put something like 12 lengths or 15 lengths in between himself and Put the Kettle On from the second last to the line, you could argue that that marks down even further Al Dancer, Getaway Trump,
yep,
and Rouge Vif, because obviously if Politilog's gone 15 lengths clear in that time and they've not been able to catch up with her, you could make a point about that. I think the most interesting point for me is that Politilog probably went too slow, and it became a real test of speed, because even the actual difference in time was almost all from landing over the final flight to the winning line. Now, that means Politilog has done something like beaten Put the Kettle On by 12 lengths if you mark them up together at the jump in the last, and Defi de Soy by something like 15, because he was behind Politilog when they started, if you know what I mean. So I think Defi de Soy is just an extremely fast horse, which we know. I doubt there's many, if any, in training that would beat him if he's travelling just in behind them. Harry Cobden mentioned that perhaps I could have gone quicker, and then he said, but even if I went quicker, perhaps I would have set it up even more for Defi de Soy.
Yeah.
And I think it's possible that both those statements are true. I think the way that Defi de Soy is going to get beaten, well, apart from possibly quicker ground over 2 miles, that might beat him. But the other way is more out in the country than in the final three furlongs of a race. I think if Barry Geraghty can get Defi de Soy tracking the leader in between the final two flights, say next time out in the Tingle Creek at Sandown, then you know, those time comparisons support the supposition that Defi de Soy is going to be extremely hard to beat against any horse. I think Politilog has done really well to quicken as he did, because he didn't get beaten by that far.
No.
Although you'd have to say Defi de Soy is always going to win in that manner. So the other aspect of the Tingle Creek, of course, is that it's going to be run, hopefully, for Harry Cobden's sake, in a very different way, where there'll be another front runner, which won't put the emphasis on Politilog. What I would say with Defi de Soy, I like to be quite quirky in my betting sometimes. What I would say is that the way that he runs, if you're going to back Defi de Soy in any race, it's not as difficult to predict what's going to come second to him, because he's going to track the leading horse as late as possible and then go, which means that, you know, if the leading horse is going to be very obvious, then you've got a much greater chance of the straight focus than you normally would have. So that's kind of where I would go with that whole, you know, the umbrella of that information.
You want him to line up against an out-and-out front runner who you think that horse is almost definitely going to get the lead, and then you can be, as you say, more confident than you would be normally.
Yeah, and I think forecasts, because you're requiring more than one thing to occur, they're inevitably smaller bets than your main bet.
Sure.
But I think, you know, for me, if I was, you know, if Defi de Soy was 3-1 or something in the Tingle Creek, and Politilog was 5-1, and it was pretty obvious Politilog was the one he was going to track to the last, I'd probably have 8 on him. For every 8 I had on him to win, I'd probably have 2 on the straight forecast and try and get a bumper payout. As far as the novices go, I felt before the race that I was going to be prepared to forgive Al Dancer if he got beaten, because I'm not absolutely convinced about him on soft and heavy ground. I mean, his record on good to soft or quicker is 4 wins from 4. And his record on soft or heavy is 5 defeats in 7. So he might not be top class. He might be. He's certainly on the short list for the Arkle still. And but he's going to need to prove it next time we see him on good to soft or good ground.
Fascinating stuff, really. Just a different look, I suppose, at the racing that came out of the weekend. And very interesting to have the comparisons of the two times side by side. On a similar note, albeit not something we can quite draw a concrete conclusion from, lots of people will be looking forward to seeing Lost in Translation running at Haydock this weekend after a very, very taking run at Carlisle visually. Again, we can't be too dogmatic in the assessments of this, but that was another occasion where you compared it with another race on the same card and it threw up something that perhaps the visually breathtaking performance didn't.
Yeah, there was a low-grade handicapper on the card, rated 132, whose name escapes me.
Two for gold, I think so.
And actually, jumping the 8th fence, Lost in Translation was actually a fence behind. And with 4 to jump, he was something like, I think from memory, something like 10 seconds behind or something like that. So basically, Lost in Translation jogged round and then ran up the hill, in his own time, drawing away. I think he made up 5 or 6 seconds on the low grade handicapper. And so the couple of things I would get from that. First of all, I would think, at the time I thought, well, if they bring him out quickly, I wouldn't be too concerned, because he's had a very easy time of it. On the other hand, I think that race was 2.4, 2.4.5, 2.5, something like that. The only time he's ran over 3 miles at Aintree, the ground was drying. It was a slow pace and it played into his hands, because the 3 stayers in the race that were prominent in the betting gave themselves no chance the way the race panned out. So he's got a lot to prove, Lost in Translation, and he's one of my favourite horses in training. He's such a fantastic jumper of a fence. But I've always been concerned about him on soft ground. The ground has just gone to, I think it's good to soft at the moment at Haydock.
Take much there for it to get.
No, and we'll see what the weather does. You know, I mean, really, the softer the ground between now and Saturday, the more I would tend away from Lost in Translation and tend towards Bristol Domain.
Yeah, because those would absolutely be his conditions.
Yeah, and actually last year, I mean, I can't remember what the ground was, but it was goodish. It was good to soft ground, wasn't it, when Bristol Domain beats arguably more proven horses than Lost in Translation. Lost in Translation is yet to prove he stays 3 miles for me, because he ran in a slow run race at the end of the season when top of the game had probably had enough for the season.
Yep.
And he's probably flattered by that run, And at the same time, there's every chance that he will develop into a very high-class horse. Whether it's over 3 miles, I'd prefer to remain open-minded until he proves it.
Okay. Yeah, fascinating stuff then, with a look ahead to the future, and in particular this weekend in the case of Lost in Translation.
Sam, I'm very sorry to butt in, but I just remembered another thought that I had about the race, was that the horse that I think will run extremely well is Frodon, who's 6 or 7 to 1.
Right.
And if either of the favourites run to their level, they will beat him. So I thought that if it went, you know, if it went soft ground, what's good about Frodon is that he could easily lead. They'll certainly race prominently with him, and it's debatable whether he gets home. So rather, as we were talking about with Defe de Soy, if you can guess what the lead horse is, well, in this instance, hopefully the lead horse is going to be Frodon, and hopefully he's going to struggle to get home from the final, probably in between the final two flights to the line, which significantly increases his chances of finishing in second place in the forecast position.
Okay, yeah.
So again, if whichever one of the two favourites I fancy, if indeed that's what you, that's the, they're one of those are for you, I would have a little bit on the forecast to beat Frodon as well.
Okay, yeah, I like that. That's all to come, of course, this weekend. Let's deal with matters a little bit closer at hand, namely Thursday's racing. Got a couple picked out at Wincanton for the preview treatment, and we start with the 250. We'll go through these in chronological order. The 250 is a novice's hurdle, just shy of 2¾ miles is the trip for this one. At the time of recording, we've got... how many have we got in the field? We've got 13 down to take their chance in this one. Talk us through your thoughts on this race, please, Andy.
Sander Rev is the horse that interests me, Paul Nicholls' horse. Now, when he came third at Exeter, he was beaten by two horses that I think are probably half decent in Cat Tiger and Welsh Saint. I'd forgive Cat Tiger his subsequent defeat because I think they brought him out too quickly,
and
I think they would think that. For me, the money was down for the David Maxwell horse. The plan was for the David Maxwell horse to win the race, and I don't think Sander Rev was actually put into the race. I think he was given an incredibly considerate ride. Okay. I think if everyone decided to have a look at that race, I'd be surprised if most people didn't agree with me. Most of Nicholls' horses have improved significantly for the first run, and he just looked a very, very obvious one, a very obvious improver. It was soft ground, so if it does rain, it's good to soft at the moment, that'll be no problem. I think it's good to soft good in places.
Yeah, correct.
So I don't think that'll be a problem for him. It's a slight step up in trip. He looks very interesting. The only negative with him, as far as I can see, is if the Nicholls Cobden factor makes him a short price favourite in a race where, you know, you probably got one or two horses that might be half decent. The fact that Hobbsy's got a horse in there, Nicky Henderson's got a horse in there, and Tizard has, and Kim Bailey's horse won a point to point last time out, maybe you'll get a price for him. Maybe you'll get even sneaking almost each way price. I doubt it, but you're probably looking more 11-4 or 100-30, I think.
Okay.
But he's got a big chance, and he should run extremely well.
Sandu Rev then in the 250 race at Wincanton. On to the 320 at Wincanton, then the next race on the card. We're over the fences this time. This is a novice's limited handicap chase. Just short of 2 miles is the trip. I'm already betting on this one at the time for recording. Moonlighter is 130 favourite. Baddesley Knight is 4-1. 5-1 for Esprit de Somoza. 11-2 for Tiffin Top. Locker Room Talk is 7-1. 17-2 for Musical Slave. Bucks Bin is 10-1. 14-1 Rough Night, and Sparkle and Shine is a 14-1 poke. What about this race then, Andy?
Yeah, I really like Baddesley Knight here.
Yep.
He was put in his place, apparently, by Rouge Vif last time out at Market Raisin. But if you look at the trip that day, it was nearly 2 miles two when you add the yards onto the 2 mile one. That would be too far for Baddesley Knight, who is a real 2 miler round a sharpish track. He wants good to soft ground, so I'd keep an eye on the weather. I think he's a fair bit better than that. The winning margin was definitely exaggerated through Baddesley Knight not quite staying the trip, but he jumped beautifully. Chris Gordon's just had one or two run nicely lately. I'm very keen on this horse. I think he'll win an average novice chase very soon. In this case, a handicap. I hope it's tomorrow. And I hope that the rain, if it does come, I hope it's not too heavy. Good to soft, he'll manage. preferably it'll be good to soft, good in places.
Yeah. Which it is right this moment, but there is rain forecast.
Yeah, if it rains and it goes softer, I'll personally leave him alone and hope he ties up again, looks like a non-stayer, and then we find a nice, good ground race around Taunton or somewhere like that over 2 miles. But he's a really interesting horse, lovely jumper of a fence, not top class, but he'll be a nice handicapper. And he's certainly nicely handicapped now, I feel. So if the rain stays away, he might turn out to be a strong each way bet for me at round about 4-1.
Yeah, neither of the selections would want too much rain, would they, Andy? So
probably not. I'm not sure about the other one. The other one ran on soft last time out, it was soft ground last time out. So I wouldn't be too concerned about the other one, but this one I would be concerned about.
Okay.
I'd like it to remain good to soft at worst.
We're live on Racing Radio for all of the action from 12:05 on Thursday. Myself, Sam Norris, in the studio with Kate Tracy and Gary Capewell for all of the action. Andy, thank you for that. Pleasure as always, and good luck with the selections.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.